This is Linda Hurwitz and Judy Rubenstein interviewing Rabbi Lee Heber on December 28, 1978 for Oral History Project 2, Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women.
Rabbi Heber, could you tell us about your immediate family, your parents, grandparents, and as far back as you can remember? Yes.
I mean, that's where I'm born, what my father was, what my grandfather. They were very religious people. And I'm born in Poland, so it was a city called Kalisz.
Kalisz?
Yeah, Kalisz, K-A-L-I-S-E. But a Polish city near Warsaw. I'm born there. I'm raised in Russia. I'm raised in Russia. My whole life, my father moved. 1914, when the first soldiers were not born then. My father moved to Moscow. I was a child. And he lived in Moscow for a week until the revolution. And the communists came to power.
Excuse me, what year were you born?
I was born in 1905.
1905. So then you moved to Moscow when you were 9 years old, and just lived there for 3 years?
No, we lived there for 5 years. We brought together the communists. The communists were a jinx, they were called Bolsheviki, the Bolsheviks.
After 1917, 1918?
Yeah. Until 1920, then they moved to Kaskar, the store. Approximately my education in school was in Moscow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, could we just go back first to Poland?
Yeah.
And could you tell us about your parents and your grandparents and their life in Poland before you were born, as far back as you can go?
Businessman. He was in business. He was a very wealthy man. In the city where he lived all his life, he was born there. He died there. He was a very religious man. He had nine children, all my uncles and aunts. And my father was the oldest son. My father was also in business.
What business was your grandfather in?
My grandfather was in lumber business. He had a lumber yard. Rich. My father was also his wife until the communist regime took away everything because he had a big business in Moscow.
What was your grandfather's name?
Samuel Heber.
And your father's name?
Jacob.
Your mother?
You have to know his name. My mother's sister is Sarah, Shane Sarah, two names, another Shane.
Pretty?
Pretty.
Remember Shane Sarah.
And her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Sydney, S-Y-T-N-E-R, Sydney.
Was she from the same area?
She was also born in college, and she passed away in a big loss of cancer.
So that you lived in Poland until World War One came, and you did everybody from your town go into Russia then to escape Germans?
Kalisz was the first city that the Germans took when they went in the war, because Kalisz was 2 miles from the German border. Mm-hmm. So that was the first city that they took. And they burned the city. They had a rule in Germany, you know, they were going to kill us. But the first city that they took, they burned the whole city. People ran away, not to Moscow. Moscow, the reason we moved to Moscow is because my father, 2 months before the war, he had a, he was a big businessman. He had a factory from, I don't know in English how to explain. Factory was from, I don't know, where European used embroidery.
Oh, uh-huh.
He has a big factory. So he sent the merchandise to Russia, to Moscow. The factory was in Kalish, and so he went 2 months before the war. He went to, there was a city, it's hard to explain you everything, it will take weeks. He went, there was a city in Moscow for business, like you had Leipzig in Germany. You know, Leipzig was a big city for business. The whole world came there to the business. Russia had a city, the name was Nizhny. Nizhny Novgorod. There was a known name. This was a city that all big business people came there and opened up stores to show their merchandise. And they were there for 3 months. And this is when my father went. The war started, I think, September the 2nd. And the war started August the 5th. And he went there in June or July. And he was there with salespeople. He had a whole business. So when the war broke out, so and my mother with 3 small kids were left in college. So he sent one of the salespeople from Russia, from Nizhny, to near college. He ran out from the city. And they found us, and they took us to Russia from us. It was not an easy job, as I tell you, I'm coming to Petrograd, and it was. It was not easy. It was the middle of the war. We had to go through the war, the whole military. But we came to Moscow.
Were you able to take any of your belongings with you? Nothing at all?
Everything was burned. But my father was wealthy enough, he had enough merchandise in Russia, but he put up not a business then in Moscow, and he conducted his business in Moscow.
Did you know other people did your family know other people in Moscow at the time?
Then when we moved to Moscow, we had a lot of friends. Sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sweet. How about telling us about your home life once you settled in Russia? Your family, like you said, that your family was religious.
Okay. My father was. I with my brother was 2 years older than I, and he was 11 years. He was also in diplomacy. He died in diplomacy. So my father, his whole life, he gave away to raise the children in a religious way. So he gave away his money and his life. So he was looking for a place where to send us. In Moscow, because Moscow was not a city to raise children if you want to raise them in a religious way. Moscow was in this time, because the Jews were not allowed to live in Moscow then. I don't know if you know the story. The Jew had to have, there were 3 kinds of Jews. They could live in Moscow. A very rich man that had a big business, and that was my father's civil machine. And it was somebody was in the army for some years, something like that. And somebody that was a worker, he had a special kind. My father was allowed, but to raise children in a religious way was impossible. So my father was looking for a place where to send us to a school, to a yeshiva, to a school, so we should be raised in it. So we went, me with my brother. He sent us with my mother. My father stayed in Moscow a whole week. When he came, there is a, you heard of the Balachera, there was a city, just 500, 450 miles from Moscow, that called the Balach, there was a yeshiva. So he sent me with my brother, and my mother went with us to the Balach. And we lived a whole year there to study in the yeshiva. My father was a Muslim. He came back every weekend for Shabbat. My father was a Jew. This is the answer to your question. The home life. So we were raised there, and I was ordained in the parish. I studied in the parish for approximately 12 years. My ordination was there. I used to be, in my young life, a genius in the, I mean, I was ordained with great honor. This is a little attractive also. We went through a lot later on, and family's time. We went through, my father was arrested, and the communists wanted to send him to Sibir, and he ran away. He saved his life.
About what year was this?
This was in 19... we moved from Moscow to Rostov. Rostov is in Kavkaz. My father moved. That was after the revolution, 2 years, 1990. Mm-hmm. 1990. And we lived in Kavkaz. Kavkaz was the Niki. It was not... the communists did not reach Kavkaz. It was a war between General Deniki and... So we lived there. There was a very nice life, because the communists could not, the Nikon was stronger than the communists, if you read the history. So we lived there, and I started to tell you something.
That your father was almost arrested by the communists.
Yeah, so from Rostov in 1922, we bought a horse and wagon my father drove a horse and wagon from Rostov to the Polish border. This is approximately 1,100 miles. It took him 3 months to drive the horse and wagon. The horse died. He was not a horse driver. The horse died. The horse died on the road, and he had to buy a new horse. And he took with him a lot of money this time. But little by little, the money disappeared. So he had to give away money to save the life. Until he reached the Polish border. When he reached, he was safe. His wife, my mother, was with us in the store. And she made a living from selling on the market, selling on the market different kind of things, exchanging. We couldn't sell this kind of hard to sell them. Just to exchange for bread, she sold pieces of gold, she sold black, everything was black market. And from this we made a living until it came a time when Poland was in war with Russia, with Germany. In Poland, when this peace started, and then Poland gave permission to all the people that were born in Poland to have right to come back. And Russia agreed with it. So then we came together with our father. It was peace to the 2 years.
It's been very hard on your mother and the children.
Sure. We had a lot of sisters. She was still there. And my sister, you heard about Rabbi Rifkin. He was a great man. A great scholar.
Uh-huh.
He was the Rosh Yeshiva from the story of the dad. This is my sister's husband. My sister is also, she has a lot of education. She gave out these 4 books in Hebrew. Her record is known. Her name is Rifkin. Naha Rifkin.
Naha?
Naha Rifkin. You have a lot of records for children.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister.
Where is she living?
She lives in Brooklyn.
When you said that you became, you were studying with the Lubavitch.
Yeah.
Was there difficulty with that? Because I remember reading that the Lubavitch and other school studies, there was a lot of friction.
And the rabbi was arrested. He was sent to some. But later on, when I came to Poland, then I when I came to Poland, it was 1923. I was 18 years old, and then I really the Babich moved the whole yeshiva to Poland. So I studied in there and got my degree, my
the nation.
By the nation.
Was it very common to be ordained in the Lubavitcher movement, though?
You have to have a good, there isn't too many very young men that are ordained in the Lubavitcher. But Lubavitch, they watch you very carefully. So they, it was not easy to ordain somebody. But I was lucky.
Who was the head rebbe then of the Lubavitcher?
It was Lubavitcher rebbe himself. Lubavitcher rebbe himself. The base rebbe is Adam.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But I knew his Adam was father. I really studied when Adam was father in my life. And then he passed away in his thought. He buried in his thought. And his son took all of it.
What are some unique feelings or experiences that you had while you were training? In order to be ordained, it took much studying, obviously, and much preparation, and special people. Could you elaborate a little bit more for us?
Okay, so we have to be, and that's taking it on, and so this thing that I'm not in today's rabbi. Today is easier to come out. I mean, if somebody knows something, you can become a rabbi. I'm not telling you all of it, but there are places you can become. That then was not easy. I can just tell you, I don't know if it's the brother to go in. When I was a saint, I had to be in Europe. The rabbis had a shayl.
Question.
No, the rabbis came in, women came with chickens. She found something in the chicken and she opened up an eagle or
a
you know this.
Yeah, to settle all kinds of decisions.
And they settled also, the rabbis settled. A Jew, a religious Jew never went to court, to a Gentile court. Everything was settled in the rabbi's house. It was like a courthouse. Day and night, they were coming up, people, all the troubles came to the rabbi, all the good things came to the rabbi. So we had to work at the rabbi's house to stay there 3 months, at least. I stayed 6 months. Because I enjoyed, there was hundreds of beautiful stories. You could see the people's mind. You know, before I finish, you know, I've got my doctor's degree in psychology 6 weeks ago.
How about that?
Yeah, I got my master's 12 years ago. I was already 58 years old. But I got my doctor. So I was in psychology always. Before I
wonderful.
And that was a psychology thing. It was very interesting. So I had to work at the rabbi's house. I worked 6 months. It was a great rabbi. When I was ordained, and then, after going through the internship, it was not easy for him to give you. He had to know your character and your, how much, after working with him together 6 months, he knew already. He didn't have to test you anymore. But he still gave you tests, not in Shofar, you know what the Shofar is. He asked you questions that have nothing to do with the Shofar. He asked me a question. Before I was ordained, he asked me, let me ask you, what are you going to do when you are going to be a rabbi? You are in the shul, you are in the synagogue, and one of your members will start to bleed from the nose. So he had to take a white handkerchief and put it in the nose. There is 39 works that you cannot do in other days. And from the Torah, we are taking 39, when a test malachus is called Five the Nine Walk, kind of walk. One of the Five the Nine is painted. When you take the handkerchief, put to the nose, and the blood paints the handkerchief, and the guy is bleeding from the nose, and when he comes to ask you, Rabbi, what should I do? Can I put a handkerchief in my? What are you going to tell him? You're going to be a rabbi after the nose. So I'm just telling you, this was the question. Two boys before me were tried. One answered, I studied everything, but I don't remember to have such a thing in Shomara. So I will go down and look up. If something do happen, it can happen very. So the rabbi told him, until you go look up and find it, the guy can die and the blood will come out in his mouth. So better know it before. So anyway, when it came to me, so I gave him the answer. I mean, there is no question. There is a law. If somebody, every illness, every sickness that is inside, you can do anything. You can make it not fire and shabbos. You can do everything. Because inside, it's dangerous. I mean, it's poor nest. It's called in Hebrew, the poor nest. It means you can die. If there is a doubt that a person can die, you're have to show him, so you're allowed to do everything. This is the answer. But I'm just telling you, the rabbis, how careful they were then to give you an ordination. You're asking me what it was. It was not like today you go in and if you know a piece of Chumash, you say Bible, you're a rabbi, you know how to sing in Kilkenna. There it wasn't. It was different much. Okay.
Did you also learn other subjects of the time?
Okay. I learned, my father was afraid we should go in a school, in a Gentile school, because there wasn't any day school, so we had to go. So he was wealthy enough to hire teachers. And I went through, I had 12th grade with teachers coming to the house every day, teaching all kinds of stuff. Then in Moscow, not in Moscow, in Rostov, I started a little bit to go, it's not college, to go to a higher school where my father accepted that I am allowed to go. I lived in Paris, I came here from Paris. And I went to Sorbonne, in Sorbonne I went for California,
university. You seem to know so many languages. You obviously already knew Polish,
no, Polish, good.
Russian,
is not fashion.
Yiddish.
I thought that I did. In Solomon University, that I got my degree from psychology, I was teaching Russian and French.
So you speak four languages fluently?
I can tell you, I forgot that. I cannot speak English good, and I forgot the other language. I really haven't got any language. But I know, I can still. If I will just talk 2 days, so it comes back to me.
Do you also speak Hebrew?
Sure.
So then you really know six languages,
at least. They say I know seven.
Which is the seven? Polish, Russian, Yiddish, Hebrew, French, English,
German.
German. But I'm not even German because I don't like them. But we have in Polish, we have the Targum. Targum is Aramaic, and I was very good in Aramaic language.
You're right, there aren't many scholars like you left, I'm sure.
No, I was very good in language. When I was a baby, I was a child. If you know the Talmud, you know what's going on in the Talmud. You know, I knew a place to say it myself. This will repeat what I prayed myself. I knew the Talmud at least six chapters by heart. my father was a very good man. And he paid me with my brother a ruble for each page learning. So we were very anxious to learn.
Do you advocate bribing our children today also?
No, that's what I was trying to. I think I wasn't just selfish. I made a mistake. I was not anxious to get rich. So I worked I did my job, but I never became rich. I'm not telling you I'm poor. I'm not saying
yes.
Here you should, should give me a loan. But I'm telling you, I was never rich to be able to bribe my children.
Are you really sorry that you didn't have more money because you were so used to it?
I have two sons, so they are rabbis. They make me a better living for them. And I gave up my rabbinical position because I never liked, I was years and years in another life. It's a crisis. You're selling your soul, you're selling your neshama for money. You have to do things to agree with the congregation. They want this, they want this.
A lot of politics.
No, and they want in the religion. I'm still better, I'm an Orthodox Jew. So, and I'm against it to agree. If you say something to the congregation, don't do that, and they are going, I go out and see they are sitting in a cafe, restaurant, and eating, so, and you told them not to do it. I'm giving you one example. I cannot help it. But I decided to get out, and that's the reason I am in this business with the retarded children, because I enjoy it very much. And this is a congregation that listens to me. They never told me that I was talking too much. They don't talk so much. They make you speak shorter. They listen to me every single time. And I enjoy it. I enjoy this work.
Could you tell us a little bit more about your adolescent life? I mean, did you ever... You were studying so much at the time and learning, and did you have time to have fun?
I don't know what you mean fun, to play ball.
I don't know what they did to for recreation.
I'm not telling you, we went to my father and mother took us, and we were children, they went to summer places. We had pleasure, but I myself never had fun. Fun that you call fun is, I don't know, maybe I am a little bit, I have to start and work the right way. I'm teaching now, we have our class, and the God is here, and you know, we have the God, and Weissman, so there, Saturday afternoon, I have our class, there comes at least 40, 50 ladies, we have a wonderful class, we learn it Kumish, and they enjoy it, because all my life I was in this business, and I know I don't have to look over what the hell. So last Saturday, we had a practice with the same teachings we discussed and discussions that have been present. They asked me, Rabbi, what's your opinion about some fun? As you say, fun. So I personally, I explained, let me explain you you have time. I explained, the creation, we talked about why we are created, what is the reason for it, the purpose why we are created. I mean, God created a world, we explained what is the purpose of it. There are purposes, in the Bible Bible is studied, as I read. I believe in God, and I accept that. But if we consider that this world is just a passing room, you have to pass here to be able to come higher, and you have to work out. So they said the same thing, because there is so many pleasures in this world. My answer was, I'm telling you the same answer, and I'm looking your eyes like crazy. So I asked them what kind of pleasure that these people have pleasure. I don't know really the pleasure, because I never experienced it. I was never in a nightclub. I never danced with the girl. I never did all this. I still cannot understand what kind of pleasure it is to go to a nightclub and come home. You are tired, you take a few drinks. And what kind of pleasure is this? Can you really there tell me the pleasure? And I'm telling you, I still don't understand the pleasure that people have from this world. They call it in Hebrew, Oidam Hazer. Oidam Hazer means this world. Oidam Abel means the world to come. So what are people looking for from the pleasure? What is it? I mean, to play ball is a beautiful thing. But I can tell you, I'm listening sometimes to television, and I see the ball players, and I don't understand why yesterday they were saying, I heard on television, 3,000 or 4,000 all night,
yes,
to get a ticket. So,
for the Steeler playoffs.
I really cannot understand. If people will explain me, if I win something to somebody else, if somebody else plays ball and wins, so what kind of pleasure do I have? Huh? Can you tell me? Huh?
Well, I'm sure your pleasure comes from good classes, good discussions, yes, turning people's lights on in their heads.
When I sit and study the moral or something deeper, then I have pleasure. Then I really